Welcome to Diversity Discourse, the official podcast of Minority Business Entrepreneur Magazine. This is the space where we create meaningful conversations around supplier diversity, diverse business entrepreneurship, and diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the industry's most engaging and successful entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and experts. Now, let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome, William, and thank you for stopping by Diversity Discourse today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right. So tell me a little bit about your journey to entrepreneurship and how you've been able to build such a successful company.
Well, I started off in the commercial banking space, kind of from the ground up, learning as an analyst, as credit analyst, you know, the ins and outs of business, what was important, how to manage the money, and how to use working capital to help businesses to grow. And so I got to see businesses from both small, not necessarily startups, but people that had gotten out of the gate and were doing well and growing and had some success, all the way up to very successful middle market size companies. So for a period of, I don't know, 12 plus years, I had a kind of front view to what people did and how they grew their business. The benefit of that was to learn from people's mistakes and also to see their great success and how being an entrepreneur transformed their lives, not just professionally, but also financially and what it did for their family. And so that started me off on my journey, and, you know, gave me a laser-like focus on who I wanted to be. So when I got to the point, where I was able to, you know, grow from baby steps into entrepreneurship, I was right there on the edge of the bridge, ready to jump. and I took that leap of faith. And here we are many years later, the benefit of that growth, and a lot of mistakes, has brought me to this point.
Okay. But now you started in commercial banking. Tell me about that transition to logistics.
Sure. So initially my transition was, I started out, logistics was my second step. When I was in the banking business, I, you know, started out doing a little bit of side investing, to understand how to take the risk, right? How to get involved in business, and how to manage the risk. I grew that, and used that opportunity, that money, those experiences to get into my first business, which was a janitorial cleaning business. And then I grew that business and I sold that business, and flipped into this business. And when I got into this business, I started, you know, once again, wanted to learn, you know, the same formula, wanted to learn all the steps, you know, in business, as we all know, there are no shortcuts, right? The shortcuts are almost an impediment because you can't, you know, you're only as good as the mistakes and challenges that you've been able to overcome. And so those baby steps and learning from the bottom up and building it from one person doing everything to, you know, getting help, part-time help to then full-time people. That was all a part of the journey that took me to where I am today. I wanted to be in the logistics space because I had learned from all those experiences that, you know, you need to target an opportunity that, you know, has leg, you know, beyond just, you know, a fad or, you know, today's interest. And in logistics, if you think about it, there's nothing that we use every day, whether it be the pen we're writing with, the computer we're typing on, or even the pieces inside of the computer that doesn't at some point in time require logistics to be processed, built, value added, or get to the end consumer. And so I wanted to be a part of an industry that, you know, whether I exist or not, whether I'm doing the right thing or not, is always going to be there, right? And there's always going to be opportunity. There's always going to be opportunities to grow. For me, that was one of the triggers that made me target this industry and want to be in it and want to grow in it.
Okay. So, and what is it about your business that you are most passionate about?
Well, I think there are two things that I really enjoy. One is, you know, kind of carrying on for what I was just saying, is that the opportunity to grow, right? Because with one challenge comes a new opportunity. There is, you know, today you could be doing, you know, hauling washers and dryers, and tomorrow you could be doing, you know, thermal plasma, big vacuum chambers, right? So there's an unlimited number of things that you could do and grow, and many niches that you can get yourself involved in. That is extremely exciting to me and what I love, because it's a new opportunity. You know, for a number of years, I did a lot of stuff that was in the entertainment space, which is, you know, sexy, cool. And then, you know, for a lot of other years, I did stuff that was, you know, plain Jane vanilla that you might see on your, you know, grocery store shelf. So to me, that's exciting. That spells opportunity, and it spells the chance to grow in many different ways beyond what you could dream of. The second thing I'm really passionate about is growing my people. You know, I like to run an organization that's like a family, right? Work hard, play hard. And as you and your people are successful, you know, so does your company grow and be successful. You know, we like to say in our company model that we are the reliable link in your supply chain. And that's because internally, you know, your best person or your worst person is as strong as you'll be. And the happier and stronger your team is, and the more committed your team is, and the more opportunities they see, the greater success that you'll see as a business owner, as an entrepreneur. I'm excited about that. That to me it's cool. You know, I get a lot of joy out of seeing my people grow and them reaching new opportunities every single day.
That's a great piece of advice. Very good. Very good piece of advice. Now tell me, what are some of the specific challenges you face in the industry?
Sure. So, you know, I mean, we've all gone through the pandemic. And so there are always supply chain issues. On the one side, those are opportunities. On the other side, those are challenges that, you know, you have to deal with and become creative and think outside of the box to solve. You know, the value proposition to your customer is not only how are you going to help me make money, but how are you going to help me solve this problem? And so, you know, the biggest challenges are being prepared and learning constantly as to how do you develop new techniques, or how do you develop innovative ways? How do you find a solution to problems that you don't know exist? So one of the challenges, you know, to be different than anyone else is to try to come up with, you know, innovative solutions that they haven't thought of. So at a baseline, that is the biggest challenge, right? Constantly thinking about that, having that in the front of your mind. How can we do this different? How can we do this better? So that when we're talking to the customer, we have something to bring to the table that's different than anyone else, right? When you're in a commodity service business like we are in, and you have a lot of competitors, it's even more, the focus on that is a hyper focus, right? People want to know, you know, what can you do that the next guy can't do, right? Or the next individual person can't do. The other challenge that we see is the problems of the economy trickle down really fast, you know, to us on a micro level. So extended payment terms. So as a small to medium sized business, managing that financial risk and being a partner to your customers, from the perspective of, you know, how long do they take to pay, right? And keeping those relationships with your vendors, your suppliers, managing that relationship where you want to be a great partner and you want to provide a value-added solution, but, you know, being able to manage that financial risk is a real challenge. And for any small to medium-sized business out there today, it's more prevalent than ever.
I can definitely understand that. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit, because you're also the co-chair of the Minority Business Enterprise Input Committee in BEIC for the Pacific Southwest Minority Supplier Development Council. And you also serve on the National MBEIC for the National Minority Supplier Development Council. So clearly you're dedicated to helping other MBEs build and scale their businesses. Tell me, what do you see are the primary hurdles to MBEs being able to do that?
Sure. So similar to wanting to see the people within my organization grow, I'm a big believer. My parents taught me that, you know, each one helps one and none of us, something my dad said many years ago that I wish I had learned and paid attention to, was none of us is as smart as all of us. And so I wish some of the hurdles where I was after the fact, like, man, I wish someone had taken the time to tell me about, you know, this, or at least let me know or give me some sort of clue. And some of the ways that we have been able to break in where maybe we were operating as a tier two or tier three, but we could never, you know, get in the room to pitch as a prime or a tier one or, you know, direct to the customer. The NMSDC has given me that opportunity. The certification has given me that opportunity to have some of those conversations and get into those rooms where I could legitimately say, you know, hey, at least consider me, right? And then we can potentially have the conversation. But those opportunities, you know, once again, can only be realized by the problems that you can solve and the value that you could bring to the table. So for me, I had to think about, if this organization is able to give me this opportunity and help me to grow, then what can I do to pay it forward, right? What can I do to create that circle of wealth and help people move forward, people that look like me, people that don't look like me? How can I help? And being in that kind of servitude position where you're being of service to others, I think is the primary way you can do that, right? If you can connect with someone else and learn from them as much as they learn from you, opportunities are, you know, no matter what, are going to come from that. And I get value out of that, not just personally, but professionally. You know, a lot of, you know, the connections I've made, the networking opportunities from, you know, it not being just a sales call, or connecting with someone because they see the content of your character and that meaningfully want to help, you know, have come through serving, whether it be on the MBIC, as a co-chair or participating, you know, on the national level as one of the 26 chairs. You know, all of that has come. And I think that on a national level, when you get an opportunity to sit with folks, even if you're not, you know, a huge contributor, and learn from their successes and failures, that gives you a leg up on what to do next and how to strategically plan, because you get to have conversations with people that were before you, right? And there's no better teacher than that.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And you've been in business for 8 years. And although that you're based in Carlsbad, California, you actually have offices throughout the country, correct?
Correct. Yeah. We, you know, COVID changed from us being a one location spot to branching out, right? You know, recruiting and working with people and being close to our customers and being responsive has given us the opportunity to expand, you know, to different locations, to kind of build, to tackle opportunities, and to be responsive to our people's needs, right? For growing.
earlier you mentioned certification, and for those people who don't know, certification refers to actually proving you're either 51% owned by a minority, a woman, or an LGBTQ person. And it's done through an advocacy organization such as NMSDC or WeBank, Women's Business Enterprise National Council, or NGLCC, the National LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce. And for some people, it can be a daunting process to get your certification because they look at your financials, your business history, and other things like that. Now, William, I've heard arguments for and against certification. And as a certified MBE, what are your thoughts?
Obviously, I selfishly say that I'm for certification, but I think going through the process is important, right? So anyone can say, can put their hand up and say, I am this, you know, or I can do that. But are you really, and can you really do this or do that? And I think going through the certification process, is an opportunity not only to learn about you and your capabilities, but it's also an opportunity for you to understand what is it going to take to be successful. I also think from the large company perspective, the certification adds a layer of value to them, right? Adds a layer of, hey, is this company really who they say they are? This company has gone through this level of scrutiny. How can we, now we feel comfortable because of this scrutiny to bring them into our supply chain, right? So that's a value add to the companies that we consider it. I also think that we have a responsibility to, really try to recycle the dollars and to bring people into the supply chain that wouldn't necessarily have that opportunity or may be eclipsed by other folks. And I think the certification and the certification process, bring that to the table as much as possible. I would hope that, going through the challenge of getting the certification, would be worth something, and people would want to do that. I would hope that it wouldn't just be, hey, I have this relationship with this person and they told me X. Now I'm in the door. I would hate that would be what it would be all about. I mean, if that was the case, we wouldn't be where we are in our society today. So I think, championing the MBE certification and going after various certification is extremely important, right? And I think that we shouldn't get away from the original reasons why we had to fight so hard to get it and put it in place. We shouldn't forget about that. And we should understand that, we have to come to the table with as many arrows in our quiver, right? As many tools in our tool belt to get the opportunities that we need in order to grow and to stake our claim and to bring growth to our respective communities. And I just don't see a reason why anyone would go against that.
Now, in addition to your entrepreneurial accomplishment, you've also established the John William Montessori School in Ghana. And as an education proponent who believes wholeheartedly in education and the benefits of it, I'm excited. I was very excited to hear about that. So tell me a little bit more about it.
Sure. So I'm originally from Ghana in West Africa. That is, I was born in America. But my folks were from there, and from an early age, I was living there, growing up there and being here. I had the fortunate, God bless me with parents, with a mom that worked for the United Nations. So that allowed me to see the world. But what it also taught me was, education and actually knowing, going back to what we were talking about before, about if someone would take the time to educate me or mentor me or taught me about X, Y, and Z, I would have been, that much better, more prepared. But education and access to opportunity is the you know, is the lifeblood of changing your circumstance. And so actually 25 years ago this month, August 1997, we established the first school in the village that, you know, my family is from and that I, you know, am from, in Kanasi Kumasi in Ghana. And, you know, we've grown it little by little. As of today, we have 1,233 students that go to that school. We have a second school in partnership with another folks that is an all-girls academy. But our main school and what has grown successfully over the years and continues to grow is the John Williams Montessori School. We focus in on kids from the community and providing them a quality education at an affordable price. You know, and it's a competitive environment. But what we're most proud of is the kid that are, you know, wouldn't necessarily have access to that level of education at that price point, what they've become today, right? And as you can imagine, after 25 years, you get to see some of the fruits of the labor, some of those folks that have been able to come to America, for example, or go to Europe to go to university. Or, you know, those that have gone on to become doctors and lawyers, right? And how that has impacted not only their respective communities, but their family. And, you know, the opportunities that it's translating. You know, if someone in that part of the world can pull themselves up to the point where they can be, you know, a lawyer or a doctor or, you know, a professional or an entrepreneur, imagine the opportunity that creates, you know, that cycle of wealth that creates. You know, they go from, you know, living in a situation that, you know, you and I would find very difficult, that they manage through very bravely and heroically, to becoming, you know, you know, a growing, thriving, you know, opportunity, in a situation where, you know, they can not only take care of themselves, but help a generation or two continue to grow and be successful. So that's the story of JWS or John Williams Montessori School. And we hope to continue it and grow for another 25 years.
And I just wanted to talk more about your background. As you say, you are Ghanaian and both your parents are, your mother worked for the United Nations. How incredible. But tell me a little bit. How bad was it growing up, being exposed to, I guess, so many different cultures and environment? It had to be exciting.
Absolutely. It 100% framed me. I'm a true UN kid, as they call it. You know, born in one country, but from another. And, you know, went to UN schools. You know, so what they call UNIF, United Nations International Schools, went to those schools, went to the headquarters in New York City. You know, and came up through there, but, you know, lived in different parts of the world. You know, my mother, was known as the Iron Lady. You know, who I am today couldn't have been possible without her. Right. So she is, you know, right. She's from a little village that, you know, there was nothing. And her father, you know, went to second grade, my grandfather, and, you know, was forced to start working, and he became an entrepreneur. And her mother was an entrepreneur. And so that, you know, I'm going to grind it out. You know, I'm going to grow. I'm going to take whatever I have and I'm going to multiply it, you know, was really in their blood, for lack of better words, you know, and there's no salesmanship about it. The truth is the truth. You know, my grandfather had a number of wives, 18 wives to be specific, because he was so successful and he wanted all of his children to, you know, to go to school outside of the country, because that theme of education being the number one reason or the number one, you know, tool to become successful and change your life circumstance. That seed came from him. He believed in that. So he did everything in his possible power to send all his kids to school outside of Ghana. And from that, opportunities happened, and coincidentally, his business as an entrepreneur, his two most successful businesses were mahogany tree farming, the wood that the mahogany wood that you see in Italy came from, the continent. And he made his money doing that and in the transportation space, right? Coincidentally. And so from that, that enabled him to have the capital to be able to grow his family and to give his kids the education they needed to be successful. My mother, she went to Hampton. She was able to pull herself up, go to secondary school in her country, go to London, and then end up in at Hampton, an HBCU, and, grow her career here. Eventually, that led to her working at United Nations and growing there. And because of what she brought to the table, the content of her character, she led a lot of missions that, she was in when George Bush deployed to the first Gulf War. She was out there when they needed someone to, run or supervise the elections in South Africa and Namibia. They achieved their independence. She was there. She was deployed to a lot of war torn places as a leader, because she was known as a builder. Everyone respected her because of the content of her character. And that she, wanted to help all sides grow and she wanted to give back. And so that's how I was framed. Seeing her and seeing her journey and seeing how her success, was through empowering others and, developing compromise that worked for everyone, right? That typical win-win situation. That inspired me, and being in those different countries, learning from her, learning different languages, and traveling so much, that gave me a completely different worldview. I saw things as possible and not impossible. And that made, that's probably, why I don't fear risk, right? Because I see, I've seen the impossible. I've seen someone, go from the lowest of lowest to the highest of highest, no matter what their circumstance has been. My father was a university professor. So, he taught in the, New York University school, system. So CUNY, and he taught for many years mathematics and computer science. That's where the tie back to education. So when we originally as a family thought about what we wanted to do, in terms of giving back, my mother wanted it to be something in her village, where in Townsville, where we, have a house and where we, grew up in. But my father's education background, is what, focused it on. We're going to start building a school, right? We're going to start with one block and then we're going to get another block and get another block, and grow and grow and grow. So, his background and what he did was in education.
Now, William, any final thoughts before we close out today?
I would just like to say, thank you for the opportunity to, showcase not only what we try to do at Block of Logistics, but what the school brings to the table. Anytime we have the opportunity to let people know about us, and to let us know, let people know about who we are and what we would like to bring to the table. We appreciate that platform and an opportunity. So thank you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for joining me today. I enjoyed learning more about you and your business and especially the school. So tell everyone how they can contact you or actually contact your company.
Sure. So you can reach out to me directly via email. It's simple. It's WK Randall. So WKRANDALL at thecompanyname.com, which would be BOATENG logisticswithanS.com.
Awesome. Thank you again, and I will talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Diversity Discourse, the official podcast of Minority Business Entrepreneur Magazine. We hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to subscribe so that we can join you again. And if you appreciate the show, jump on over to iTunes and give us some stars. For more tips and notes from the show, check us out at mbemag.com. And to find out which guests and topics we'll be discussing next, sign up for our newsletter at mbemag.com/pulse. That's mbemag.com/pulse. We'll talk to you next time.